So it really does, you know, meet my needs and then my needs to
and
be,
the needs of your guests.
And the needs of my guests and my, like, emotional needs to be complimented.
And your needs to, like, have your home have hotel experience feelings.
I, like, kind of do want my home to feel like a hotel.
It does. And now that this room that we're currently in has a 3 on the door, it is increased.
The third room needed some branding.
I know. I love it. I love it. Unit 3.
Unit
3? Unit 3 of 2.
Unit 3 of 2. Mm-hmm. Sure is.
That's where I would like to live. Or maybe not, because it's
very, like, number 12 Grimald Place.
I know. Well, that's exactly what I was thinking, yes. Mm-hmm. And then I was thinking about getting locked out and then getting the secret keeper, and it's a whole thing.
Oh, I want this room to have a secret keeper.
Is it Poppy?
Oh, it's my cat.
She'll never tell.
She'll never tell. XOXO. Nope. Gossip girl. Gossip cat. Your secret cat.
Gossip Cat. Could it be a show?
I'd watch it.
Does she have a voiceover, or is the cat silent and just does stuff and the humans talk?
The cat is silent, but then the show is narrated by the cat. But you don't see the cat talking. It's like a voiceover.
Just a voiceover. Who do you choose for the voiceover?
Wow, that's so hard.
It depends on the vibe of the show.
It depends on the vibe of the cat.
Yeah.
Who would do the
voiceover? What if it's Poppy?
If it's Poppy?
That's tough, because I know she has probably her own unique voice for you.
She does. Oh, I don't know. Who would you cast to do Poppy's voice?
I don't know. I mean, I'm leaning towards, like, an older British actress.
Oh, British. I like my cat being British.
Kind of a Murder, She Wrote vibe, but with a cat as the star.
Kind of oddly open to that. Not what I would have guessed. Not an Angela Lansbury guess for me, but I'm open to it.
She could do it. Mm-hmm. Is she alive?
Angela Lansbury?
Yes.
I have no idea.
Well, here's to you.
Hopefully not. Alive or dead.
You are wanted, Angela Lansbury, for this part.
Listen, shout out to Angela Lansbury. Also, welcome to Why Are You Like This?
Welcome.
Welcome.
We can't afford to be third wave about that, so whatever.
Jamie is, like, ready to do just, like, late-night phone sex ads, and honestly, like, here for it.
You gaslight the teacher. Okay.
Who's participating in this study that's, like, here for, like, the $30 I, like, came in this cup so 30 different women could taste it? I'm like, who's that guy?
They're going to break your legs and feed you to the sharks.
This is what I want, because I assume these people get to have deep chats all the time together because they go to youth group. And I was like, I just want someone to talk to me, and I was just like...
Anal insertions aside,
I do believe in fairies. I do.
Why Are You Like This is the weekly podcast in which we dissect some part of our culture, human behavior, etc., etc., in order to determine why people are the way that they are. And spoiler alert, if you didn't pick it up from the jump, that's Jamie Ryan presently in Chicago.
My verbiage gave it away, and that is Austin Williams, who I'm looking at with my eyes and not just my ears.
Beautiful.
In also Chicago.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
We're comfortable. We're in, like, sweat loungewear. Everybody's wearing some, like, sports affiliated gear. Jamie's wearing, like, a Louisville Cardinals t-shirt. She doesn't even know what Louisville's mascot is, but she's wearing the shirt. I'm out here rocking D Wade's, like, retro Miami jersey. We all feel good.
I do.
We're chilling.
Very relaxed.
We're very relaxed. We're sipping on some green tea with some notes of blueberry. Guys, it's just like a chill, nice vibe. It's later in the evening.
It is later in the evening. Yeah, this is a second recording even for us. Oh, my.
We've done two tonight.
Oh, my. Tonight.
Hey. And you know what? We had, like, a loungy day. Jamie's maybe been, like, slightly under the weather. Austin maybe drank a lot of gin last night.
It happens.
It happens to all of us. And so it was a nice, like, chill day. And we're on a good
lots
vibe.
Lots of Law and Order.
Oh, Mariska.
Thai food.
We watched some SVU episodes that I feel like we have talked about.
And they were intense.
Yeah. Yeah. Did a little research. Hung out. Napped. You know. Just like
recovered.
Truly.
Mostly recovered.
Truly, yeah, it was a day of recovery. Mm-hmm.
Yes. But I'm feeling much better now that the evening has come.
Yes, right? Just in time.
Just in time to do this. Anyway, tonight.
That's enough about, listen, enough about us.
Enough about our day. You don't care.
You don't care. Maybe you do care. I hope you care, but you don't.
And I hope you've had a nice day of recovery or work or whatever. But what I would like to talk about.
Be wary of your gin intake, okay? That's all I'm saying, kids.
It's good advice at all times.
We can truly all enjoy that advice.
tonight I want to talk about NDEs.
Oh, an acronym. Tell me what an NDE is.
It stands for near-death experience.
Oh.
That does not mean when someone overreacts about like a car coming near them in an intersection and says that they almost died today, and you know,
it's not one of those like I feel changed because like I could have died.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So what is it?
It is when someone literally dies for a minute or two and comes
back. Like they flatline on the table.
Yes. Okay. So people who flatline during surgery, people who are unconscious and don't have a pulse for a while, with or without a heart monitor.
Sure, sure, sure.
Yeah, so when
you don't have to be hooked up to like an EKG to have this happen to you. It's not a requirement to like, for your heart to stop beating, you don't have to be being monitored. Not a requirement, oddly enough.
Right, reporting doesn't mean, anyway. NDEs are incredibly hard to study, obviously, because like how do you get like a sample of people who are like all about to die for you to like watch and then revive them?
Yeah, well, that would...
It's truly an ethical nightmare.
I mean, I'm sure though there's stuff like that. Weren't there like groups of kids doing the thing where people would like hang themselves or like partially? Oh, because like
it's like flatliners but with nooses,
kind of. And it's like people are very into like strangulation and stuff, but I feel like this was like an internet trend for a while where people were like challenging each other to like strangle themselves on the internet.
I have a vague memory of this,
and well, and it's like it goes
this
back
is
to,
called edge play if it was at all sexual.
Yeah, I was gonna say it goes into like choking in like sexual ways. That then when you are like released from the deprivation of oxygen, it creates kind of like a euphoric sensibility in your body, and so people do it because people find it to be like a high.
Yes, it's like an incredible high.
But some people, kids, don't try that.
No, that is not advised.
Many people have definitely accidentally killed themselves.
And if you don't kill yourself, if you deprive your brain of oxygen too long, you can experience permanent brain damage. So like,
just jot that down.
Not being able to use the left half of your body. So
The risks are too great.
There are many. So obviously this is ethically a nightmare to study.
Right.
So there's not
I'm sure there are cults doing it though.
There are, and there are training facilities for NDEs in Brazil, and I was not able to find a lot more information than that.
Whoa.
Whatever that means.
Whoa.
They're like funded by Mormons.
Mormons in Brazil. Brazilian Mormons.
Well, the Mormons are here, but the facility is in Brazil.
Oh.
Which, you know, then we don't know anything about it. Anyway, so they're very hard to study. Okay. People have all different feelings about near-death experiences. If you've ever seen the show OA, did you watch that?
I never watched it, but I've probably seen something about it.
Basically, the gist of that show is there's a group of people who this horrible scientist captures. He kidnaps all of them to
already
study
don't
them.
Don't love it.
Yeah. And they're like forced to like live in this terrarium in his lab. But basically, they've all had a near-death experience that they came back from. And when they came back, they had like some new ability.
Oh, so like one girl, X-Men.
Yeah. Like one girl was blind her whole life, had a near-death experience, and then was no longer blind.
That's interesting. We have talked about similar but different about people having like some sort of traumatic injury and then all of a sudden having like a new skill, like all of a sudden I can play the piano because of this car accident.
Totally. Collective unconscious and like super memory times, we talked about that, because
totally.
It's like, where does that knowledge come from?
Trapped inside your brain.
Right. So in OA, the scientist thinks that they're either like the information is trapped in their brain, or they're tapping into like some other consciousness that's giving them these abilities.
Okay.
One woman becomes a virtuoso at the guitar and had never played before, things like that.
Got it.
So that is a science fiction thing.
It's
relevant
right
now.
Calm down. Okay.
And maybe that's what's going on in the testing facilities, but we can't know. And that's unfortunate. Maybe someday we will know.
Listen, if I had the opportunity to like go undercover and check that place out, I wouldn't.
Not unless I had powers of invisibility.
Yeah, no.
Because I would be captured.
I would be captured.
And then never seen again.
I would be captured.
Yeah, never to return. Okay, anyway, all that to say, NDEs are incredibly hard to study, and so people just have, like, a lot of, like, woo-woo feelings about them, yeah, pretty much.
As we do about anything we don't understand.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of scientists think that what people experience right before they die, if they say that they, like, started to go to heaven or, like, saw a light, mm-hmm, or something like that, a popular opinion is that that is a lack of oxygen in your brain causing, like electronic firing to happen and just like crazy shit that you hallucinate.
Okay, so this, all of this reminds me, and I've always kind of like chalked this up to the fact that your brain releases DMT when you die.
Yeah.
And so like DMT,
I thought about this too.
Right. So like the drug use itself, one of the most common hallucinations that people have on it is interacting with aliens. And mm-hmm, pretty much like everybody who does DMT experiences,
yeah,
this.
You have like a sequence that everyone experiences kind of the same thing.
Yes.
Which
and
is so weird.
Oh, it's like stressful. And but interesting, I don't know. I'm like, oh, wow, people's brains are wired in a replicatable way, I guess. I don't know. Interesting. But your brain releases DMT when you die. And so I always assume when people have that, like, they come back and they have the experience of like, oh, like I saw angels or like went to hell or whatever their vibe about anything was, which I know we're going to get into.
Yeah.
But I'm like, oh, you like died. So your brain released the DMT. So you had the... that weird hallucination. Yep. And our brains in life only produce DMT like when we're born and when we die, and then I think in like a
sometimes when we're dreaming,
like a weird
sleep
I read
differing opinions.
Okay,
but perhaps also sometimes when we're dreaming.
Got it. But generally like not something your brain produces often.
Yeah, you don't get it a lot.
You don't get it a lot. And I think that's something like when people are really sleep deprived, sometimes your brain, like your body will release,
yeah,
like DMT when you're awake because you're not like asleep enough for it to happen, which is why sometimes people like in med school or like in law school
or me during college
or
yeah,
Jamie during college will like see things during,
yeah,
the day.
It's peripheral hallucinations.
Totally.
Yeah.
And so it's very interesting. And I've always just chalked it up to like, oh yeah, of course, because you had this high that unless you're like a recreational DMT user, which is a thing, truthfully.
Yeah.
And crazy. And like, I feel like it plagues chemistry majors across the world because they're the ones who have access to making this stuff in the labs.
Yeah.
But if you're talking about like the 20 somethings. Anyway, this said, I'm like, okay, yeah, you had this rare high that you, like, never experienced. And so, of course, you're like, whoa, something crazy happened to me. And I guess as someone who's never had this experience, I'm like, yeah, that's how you'd explain it. Like, the chemicals in your brain.
Yeah. No, I agree. And I think that that's probably what it is. And I think that that's why people will argue that there is kind of like a uniform experience that everyone has when they die of like moving into a light. And we'll talk about people thinking there are stages in a,
yeah,
couple minutes. But yeah, I always also chalked it up to like brain explosions happening.
Yeah. All the synapses are firing.
Yeah. Yeah. Everybody's going. But of course, I couldn't not talk about how NDEs are used by religious people.
Yep, knew it. This is your lane.
This is my safe zone.
Mm-hmm.
I love it. Anyway, so as I mentioned before, Mormons are very, very into like NDE research.
Okay. I didn't know this about the Mormons. I guess I've always associated it with like evangelical or other kind of non-denominational Christian groups who were like, let me tell you about my experience where I died and went to hell and I'm coming back and it changed my life.
Yes. Yes. But that's why Mormons are here for it too. It's because of the evangelical kind of ability that you have with someone who's had a near-death experience.
Okay.
It's like a great testimony. And so I was reading a lot of websites.
Literally people are about like ready to testify about some NDE shit.
Yes. And so I was like reading these Mormon websites about like giving money to support like the research on near-death experiences. And it was just like full of testimonials from people who had had them and how it had changed their life and they saw God, etc.
Okay.
But I want to talk about one specifically.
One specific person.
Love
it.
Who, quote,
break it down.
Died and came back.
Okay.
And I don't remember for sure, but you are in this memory in my mind. So I feel like we were together.
Okay.
Do you remember going to church with me and my family in mm-hmm. the early thousands?
Okay.
And seeing, it wasn't like a regular church service. So there was like a guest speaker.
Yes.
And his name was Howard Storm, not Howard Sturm.
Okay. Let's just clear that up first.
Howard Storm. And he died and came back. Do you remember this?
I do. I don't remember the finer points of it, but this feels very familiar.
But you were with me, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. Okay. That I thought so. Mm-hmm. It was like a special event at my church and I invited a friend.
You know what? Listen, and I was that friend who was like, oh, this guy thinks he went to hell and came back? Sure, why not? I'm in for it.
Well, and it was interesting in the way that, like, evangelical, like, revelation shit mm-hmm. is interesting.
Yeah, man. That's why it's got a following.
I want to hear about these demons who bit you.
Honestly, truly, I do want to hear about the demons that bit you. And I think if I had the opportunity to listen to anybody talk about an NDE, no matter how religious and woo it was, as long as, like, the group was big enough that I could be anonymous, I would 100% go see that talk tomorrow.
Absolutely. No matter what the ideology. Honestly, the further away from my own ideology, the better.
I'm more interested I am.
I'm absolutely fascinated.
Yeah, let's talk about it.
So his story, Howard, and he is a local guy. If you're a Cincinnati person,
hey y'all,
we're
in Chicago collectively, but we can't stop talking about Ohio.
We can't, and it's where I currently reside. So, you know, local. So the greater Cincinnati area, local Howard Storm. He yes. is currently an art professor at Northern Kentucky University.
Okay.
So shout out to perhaps his students if you're listening.
Shout out NKUers.
And he is also an ordained minister.
I mean, of course he is.
Whatever the title is. Preacher.
Pastor.
The leader. Pastor. The head preacher. Of a church.
He's the head of some denomination. God bless.
But Howard did not always live such a life.
Oh, Howard.
So...
he truly had a come to Jesus, if you will.
In 1985, Howard was traveling internationally with a group of students, his college students.
Okay.
And also his wife. That's nice.
That is nice. Bring her along.
They were having a stressful time. Howard describes himself as an aggressive and impatient man in his younger years.
I mean, aren't we all aggressive and impatient in our younger years?
I absolutely feel that. Hopefully it continues to lessen, but, you know, we all got to work on it.
We're all a work in progress.
Yeah. So they are abroad, and in the hotel one night, Howard starts having, like, really, really horrible stomach pains.
Oh.
Doesn't
sound great.
I know. And goes to the hospital.
I'm just going to say, listen, I had a knock on wood on this because you shouldn't even put this shit out in the universe if you don't want it to happen. But I just, like, really... don't want to be in a foreign country and have to intimately get to understand their medical system at any point.
I do not. And that's I don't scary. Want to have to communicate my fears to a doctor who doesn't speak the same language as me.
Yeah, I'm stressed by that.
And I don't want to be able to not listen to the chatter between the hospital staff.
I agree as well.
Yeah, I need to listen. Anyway, so he goes to the hospital and it's... a very serious issue, and he is, like, scheduled for surgery, but the doctor who's going to perform it can't perform it until the morning. And so he's basically, like, bleeding internally and, like, laying there in this hospital all night. And in the night, he wakes up, and he's the only one in the room, and just like the nighttime exit lights and stuff are on. And he sees...
spooky.
It is a little spooky. He sees a group of people in the hallway outside of his room, and he's laying down, but they're, like, calling to him to come out into the hallway.
That feels wrong.
I know. It's weird. And I remember this. I remembered this whole story, actually, when I was reading it.
I'm impressed that you do, because I certainly do not.
I definitely needed a refresher, but as I was reading his summary, I was like, oh yeah, I definitely remember you telling this to me live.
Oh.
And he also wrote a book that I'll talk about in a minute. But, so Howard sees these figures that are calling him into the hallway. And so he goes out there and they're, like, laughing and smiling and seem to be nice. And then they're like moving further and further down the hallway where it's darker, and they're calling to him and he continues to follow them, and then suddenly it's completely dark where they
are. Did he feel like this was like a dream state? Like, did he allude to that at all?
He didn't say anything about it being a dream state. He just said that he woke up and thought that he was like alone in the hospital, but like mostly felt okay.
Interesting. Okay. Okay.
Like no longer feeling his like condition as much.
Abdominal discomfort.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And so he follows them. They're then engulfed in darkness. And as soon as that happens, these beings start like just like biting and attacking him and tearing at his flesh.
Don't love it.
So it takes a turn for the worst right here.
Clearly.
It's very bad. And Howard is cowering. He describes the pain, the torment. You can read about it in his book if you'd like to know more. And in this moment of agony, Howard, who was never a church guy, he didn't have a lot of Sunday school education growing up. He thought in his head, okay, I realize now that I have died and I am in hell.
Oh, wow.
And these are creatures who are getting me, so... How do I flip it?
Okay, let's say you have like, I don't want to sound dismissive of the experience, but let's say like you're having like a dream.
Yes.
And you dream something like this. Do you think that like your consciousness, like the assumption would ever be like, this is actually hell? Like, what would you think?
I feel like I've had dreams that I've gone to hell before.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah, actually, most definitely I have. Yes.
I don't know that I have.
Huh. Now that I'm thinking about it, the dreams are always centered around a plan to get out. And I don't even know how you would do that.
You have a lot of escape dreams. One time you had a dream that we were right. In like a Holocaust-esque like death camp together. Like you and me.
Oh, yeah. I sure did.
You have a lot of dreams where you're like trapped somewhere and got to get out.
There are times when I'm like trapped on an island with people who are pursuing me.
Wow. That must be hard.
It is a lot of escaping. All right. Well, that's something for me to
listen. File that away if you want to write in and let us know what's going on in Jamie's brain.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yikes. So there is no, speaking of escape, there's no escape for Howard. And so he starts thinking, okay, I better, I guess, try to call to the Lord. So he doesn't really know. Like, he doesn't have, like, the Lord's Prayer or, like, a rosary in the back of his head, you know?
Yeah, didn't grow up on it.
He did not.
Religion is a very much, like, learned ritual.
It's cultural. Yeah. So Howard starts saying, like, pieces of, like, the Pledge of Allegiance and, like, anything else that, like, has, like, God in it.
I oddly really respect the move.
I know. He's, like, grasping at straws, but, yeah. Like, what mentions God? Then he settles upon just like singing a little piece of Jesus Loves Me that he remembers.
Okay.
And as he's doing this.
Interesting, interesting moves, Howard.
And I'm like, what would I do? And honestly, maybe that.
What would I do in like a moment of sheer panic?
Sheer panic that all of my ideology was incorrect and I was about to be punished physically, emotionally, and spiritually forever because of it. I don't know. I do a lot of stuff.
There's not much maybe you wouldn't do to try and negotiate your way on.
Most desperate. Yeah. Eternal prison. Anyway, hell is not real. But anyway, in this story it is.
Okay.
So in his moment of agony, he cries out to the Lord via Jesus Loves Me.
Okay.
And in through the darkness, a large beam of light drops and a hand reaches down to Howard. And all the beings that are attacking him, the creatures shy away, and Howard is there by himself with this lightness
then
zips him up.
Oh.
Out of the blackness where he meets Jesus.
Oh.
And straight it's up quite the turnaround.
Jesus. All right.
So now Howard meets Jesus. What is that song? Mama meets... Oh, it's the Christmas Shoes, When Mama Meets Jesus Tonight.
Oh, God, I hate that fucking song.
It is the worst song. I'm sorry, I'm not going to derail on Christmas Shoes. So Howard meets Jesus, and Jesus basically tells him that he likes it, that Howard called out to him in this desperation.
He's like, that's nice, that's good. I'm glad you called upon.
Yep.
Good
yep.
move, Howard.
Howard describes thinking that he is with Jesus and the angels and other people for... hours and hours. They have like a whole day together.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, it is nice. And then after a little while, Jesus says, okay, well, that's kind of a wrap, but I hope that you've learned your lesson. You're actually not dead. So you're going to go back, and hopefully because of this experience, you're going to make some changes. And I am paraphrasing here.
Yes.
Wow, I'm quoting the Lord. Anyway.
Misquoting the Lord, perhaps.
I am misquoting. I'm paraphrasing the Lord, which is a sin, but it's okay. So Jesus basically tells him to get his shit together and like be a better person.
Okay.
Love the Lord. Get himself saved and go home.
Get you saved, Howard.
Howard says, I don't want to go home.
I love it here.
He says, I love to be with you, Jesus.
Oh.
And he has to go home anyway. So Howard wakes up in a hospital bed. They manage to do surgery in the wee hours of the morning. And he now is a changed man. He's a preacher of some sort.
Okay, Howard.
And he gives these lectures everywhere about his experience. He continues
to be an
art teacher.
One of which we saw. We attended a lecture.
We did attend a lecture. and yeah, now the primary motivation of his life is to get other people to Jesus.
Okay.
And I would like to show you his website that is, you can be the judge. It's kind of an art website. It's kind of an evangelical website. The branding is undecided.
Okay. I have not seen this website before, so Let me tell the listeners what they can expect. Should they visit this website? And I'll tell you what I'm seeing.
I think you should if you want to learn about Howard or his NDEs.
Okay, so what's the web address?
It's howardstorm.com. It's pretty easy.
Pretty straight up.
Here we go.
All right, so what am I seeing here? Well, it looks like our front page is basically what looks like an inspirational quote, kind of poster of clouds, like sunset. It says, our life is the choices we have made. Well, I don't disagree with that totally. That feels fine. Click here for Howard's YouTube channel. And then there's like, with better choices, we can have the life we dreamed. Okay. Howard, there's a picture of him with his dog. There's a picture of Jesus.
I think those are his paintings, maybe.
He certainly paints the light of the world. Then there's, that looks like, I assume, his book. Yep, here we go. My Descent into Death, A Second Chance at Life.
So if you want to read it, that is what it's called.
And Howard looks like your neighbor. He is like a salt and pepper, but mostly salt gentleman who I would guess is in his mid to late 60s. He's bald, he has a mustache and bushy eyebrows. The headline on here is, this is about a loving relationship with God and people. Okay.
Yep.
And yeah, you can check out and about, you can see something called 12 Gifts. Who knows what that is? Paintings, his books, a blog, and his contact info.
Yeah, so he seems to
And this
really
is a GoDaddy very website if you were
amazing.
I clocked that at the bottom. That's all.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. I like how when you hover over his paintings, they Ken Burns for you. Like some of his paintings, I like wondered if they were like, because they're kind of like celestial, but then they like zoom in and out when you hover over
them.
Yeah,
if you put your thumb on one of the paintings, it like kind of like warps it and like zooms in, and it's oddly stressful.
I like how it does on the Jesus one. It makes it look like
the
he's
one
coming
with
at
Jesus
you.
Jesus makes you feel right. Like you're really about to be all encompassed.
Encompassed by the Lord.
He paints some nice landscapes.
They're fine.
I mean,
they're fine.
Yeah. Kind of level of work I feel like you'd see paintings or prints for sale at like your city's like big art craft fair.
Yes. Yes. And or perhaps your church's art fair.
Yeah, but also like, you know, just maybe like the landscape of like an autumn scene by a lake that you might see hanging above the couch in like your friend's parents' formal living room.
Yes. They are non-offensive.
Very.
Non-offensive works from Howard.
Totally.
Anyway, so he is just one of many people who have had a near-death experience, and this is how he has chosen to use it to his advantage, I suppose, or to the Lord's advantage, as he feels.
I mean, he wrote a book. So.
He did write a book.
And I feel like it sold some sales.
And his YouTube's probably doing okay. Maybe it's not, actually.
I don't know. Who's to say? It is always interesting when people feel very spiritual about something, and then it's monetized, and I don't like
that's tough.
I'm not mad at you though, like,
no,
earn a living and do you, but yeah, there is something always to consider with spirituality being a business,
for sure for sure, or anything like emotional being monetized.
100%.
But Howard had a lot of the common traits that have been reported by other NDEers.
Okay.
And those things, according to Wikipedia, are a sense of awareness of being dead. So the moment when like those things were biting him, he was like, oh, I have died.
Yeah, I've died and I'm in hell. Okay.
A lot of them experience a sense of peace or well-being and painlessness.
That's he a no good longer, DMT.
Well, that good DMT. But also he no longer felt his injuries because he was detached from his physical body, perhaps.
Heard, got it.
They can experience positive emotions, a sense of removal from the world.
Yeah.
Other people, maybe. An out-of-body experience is sure. A big one. A perception of one's body from an outside position, often from above, and perceiving medical examiners.
Yeah, a lot of times you hear the stories about people who are like, I watched people like working on me in the hospital, like right. From above.
Right, they're like floating up by the lights.
Which that actually to me is the most interesting and hard to describe why you would have that vantage point or feeling.
Agree. However, to that point, there was some clinical research done in cardiac arrest patients okay. In 2001. It's called the Parnia study.
Okay.
Parnia, I don't know. But it was done by a man called Sam Parnia and his colleagues. And they worked at Southampton General Hospital. And there were basically they rigged up rooms in a cardiac floor.
Okay.
Where there was a really high risk of patients flatlining. And so because wow. Those were rooms where it happened a lot, you can't like create a situation where someone flatlines, but like you can be ready for it, I guess, yeah. Ethically. And the way yeah. That they tested the validity of the near-death experiences mm-hmm. And the out-of-body experience specifically, okay. Like basically a check to be like, did you really float above us or are you just like hallucinating?
Mm-hmm.
Is they created like cardboard cutout figures that had like images on one side and they hung them from the ceiling facing the ceiling so that in order to see what was on the cardboard cutout, you would have to be above them.
Whoa. Okay. This is my kind of study. Like, this is the shit I like because I'm like, it is interesting to me. I try and imagine, like, we're sitting in this room recording together right now. And I'm like, okay, what would the room look like if I floated above? And I have to get creative. And it's like very detailed that I'd be like, oh, I would see the top of these bookshelves and what's on them. And yep. Like,
you never see that plants. Though.
And it's like, yeah, it's stuff I truly never see. So I'm like, oh, that's interesting. I'm like, how do you hallucinate that? But like, so tell me about the study. Cause this is dope. Like these people are my friends. And this is the kind of research I want people spending money on, to be honest.
Me too.
I mean, I want people to find cures for cancer and stuff too. That's important. But I also want to know about, hovering over bodies and pictures on cardboard.
Yeah. As much as I really love this study,
okay.
The results were kind of lackluster. So a lot okay. Of the patients, actually most of the patients who reported OBEs, out of body experiences, mm-hmm. Were not able to describe what was on the figures. They more described like a general feeling of the room and yeah. Like some movements that were like going on with like them, like yeah. They would like describe what a doctor was doing around their physical body.
Yeah.
And I would say, to be fair, like these people who are like flatlining on a cardiac floor are like unknowingly part of this study.
And like is that okay?
I don't know about that, but what I'm saying is that like they don't know to like look at that cardboard figure and remember it.
Yeah.
Like they might
not be concerned with the like, art on the walls in the hospital room, but more concerned with their cardiac arrest, perhaps.
Yeah. Or maybe they're... I also kept thinking, like, what if they're not hovering high enough?
Yeah.
Like, maybe like, they're just below...
How low are these?
They'd have to be way up there.
Yeah.
To be out of the way of the doctors and stuff.
You'd think.
So, a fairly inconclusive study.
That's what I expected, logically. It's not what I wanted to hear, but it's logically what I expected. I would have loved it if somebody was like, oh, yeah, I did see, like, the sunrise and the, like, picture of a boat that was just, like, on this cardboard. Like, that's incredible.
Yes. Yes, it
is. But it didn't happen.
And only 4 of the 63 patients who flatlined and came back had reported any kind of out-of-body experience.
Oh.
And so then of those 4, they were like, what figures?
And people were like, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. So inconclusive, the scientific community deemed it somewhat atypical. So that's fun.
Listen, I like this study. I want more of it. I want that to be just like a staple in hospitals.
It's also just really clever.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah, it's like the counter. It's like clever, and it's just like the most straight up legit like test situation that you can think of. It's like, I think Stephen Hawking is the one that people asked. They were like, do you think time travel will ever be like possible or happening? And he was like, no. And they were like, is there a reason you think right? not? And he was like, yeah, because otherwise we'd have a lot of people here from the future.
Oh.
And I was like truly the easiest answer
right.
is usually true.
Right.
And this is like one to me that they were like, oh, how do we test if people? Let's just put something at the right vantage point and see if they see it. And I'm like, oh, that's brilliant, but like dumb.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah. So another semi untestable case study situation.
Okay, love one.
On out of body experiences.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
This is called the Smith and Miser study.
Okay.
And the woman was not named, but there was a woman who reported developing the ability as a child to experience, like, have an out of body experience at will. And so what happened for her, she described, was that she would have trouble falling asleep.
Okay.
That would then lead to kind of like astral projection of like her leaving her body. She reported sometimes watching herself move from above, but remained aware of her unmoving, quote, real body.
Whoa. Okay.
So what they did is because this woman claimed that she could do it on command.
That seems a little like.
I know. It reminds me of when you read like how to's on how to astral project, which we did do at one point.
Totally. We have read them.
It tells you to like do it at a certain sleep stage. So it's kind of like right in between sleeping and dreaming or being awake and sleeping. I'm sorry.
I know what you mean.
And she says that she learned how to do it when she was a child having trouble falling asleep. It would happen by accident. And then she like mastered it.
Well, I understand that. That's how I can burp on command.
Fair. I also think it's like how people can intentionally lucid dream.
Yeah.
You can teach yourself how to do that.
God, what a gift.
I know. If we all worked on it, I bet we could do it.
It's true.
So in the Smith and Messier, Messier, don't come for me about this.
Listen.
In the study, what they did is they had this woman hop into the CAT scan machine, the thing that watches your brain.
MRI. Okay.
And they watched her brain and she went to sleep and she reported that she was able to successfully have an out-of-body experience, that she came out into the room, she moved around.
I love an MRI study. What did they see?
So do I. They saw areas in her brain on just the left side that are associated with motion, movement, and spatial awareness all light up.
Okay. In a way that is atypical of somebody like sleeping?
Yes, because she was not actually moving her body. So like if I moved my left arm right now, or sorry, if I moved my right arm right now. There are like motion places, and I'm super simplifying this. I'm not a doctor. There are like little motion areas on the left side of my brain that would light up. And so that was happening for her, even though she's, as everyone can see, lying still. Yes. But she reported kind of spiritually walking around the room.
You know what this makes me, this to me though sounds like she's just like able to lucidly dream.
I agree.
And that it was, I think it just sounds like lucid dreaming that for you is very focused on motion.
They should put like a paper with like some words or letters on it, like on the other side of the MRI
and
machine.
See if she can see.
Right.
Them.
Tell her to get up and read it and come back.
Let's fucking hang these cardboard things for this lady. Like
exactly.
I'm invested in that.
Merge your methods, dear
Merge
scientists.
Merge your methods, dear scientists. Yes, yes.
So that one is a little more like conclusive, I guess. There's at least activity. I don't know.
Yeah, there's some brainwaves going on that make what she's describing makes sense as what she's sensing. Like, it, the dots are connecting.
Yes. Yes, exactly. This is, of course, like a more tangible study and like has feels that like it has more conclusive results than the hanging figures in the cardiac floor.
You know, MRI stuff, brain scans.
Yeah, yeah. However, what I think I would like to see is like something to compare it to where they ask someone to lucid dream in an MRI. And like, okay, what does that look like? Because it could look the same. Mm. I could easily see that looking the same.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I could too. Or if like your lucid dreams weren't focused on motion. Yeah. Maybe like another part of your brain would light up. Like if I were able to frequently lucid dream and in my lucid dreams, they were all about like eating food. You know what I mean? Like that sounds dope, first of all. But then maybe the parts of my brain associated with eating and like those senses would, light up.
Pleasure areas.
Listen, food is
pleasurable. They can tell when people are having sex dreams.
They can. They can see it in your brainwaves.
Yeah. So maybe they're confusing it with eating dreams.
Oh, maybe eating's more sexual than we think.
It is. Well, their music, sex, and food like all stimulate like overlap area.
Honestly, three of my favorite things.
Do them together.
Eat with music while fucking.
Exactly.
Great.
Yes.
That might create its own special kind of euphoria.
It would most definitely.
I don't know. I'm not really sure that I'm pro food in the bedroom, but that's truly an entirely different episode. It can be fine.
I think it's more of like a stickiness issue than anything else.
I think the foods that I enjoy the most are like not foods for sex.
Well, you have to choose differently.
I just, nope.
Yeah. Like cake. Chocolate cake.
I just like am not a big sweet tooth person, and I feel like the foods associated with sex are just like whipped cream and chocolate. And I'm like, well, can we get nice block of, you know, aged cheese in here? That's not really sexy. Chicken wings, are those hot? Probably not. But like,
you could get some liquid cheeses involved.
Just some like a, not, what about like a light queso? Nacho, a little queso.
Huh. You could put olives over the nips. Okay, ew. I'm done.
Okay. Jalapenos.
I was picturing it over a man's nips. Though,
like pickled jalapenos.
Sure.
Okay.
That's a lot of heat.
Listen, more ways than one.
Oh, boy. Anyway. Spicy. All right. That's enough of that.
Okay. Sorry.
Some cool ranch in there to put out that fire.
All right. Gross.
Why are we talking about that? Sex lighting up certain parts of your brain. MRIs. Okay, so that's semi-conclusive research about out-of-body experience. Okay. And that is not fully NDEs, but it's a part of them. Because a major piece of near-death experiences is the out-of-body part.
Sure, sure, sure. That all makes sense. That checks out.
And otherwise, NDEs, like, the experience of that, if we take religion away from it, because...
Okay.
People have a strong tendency to like apply whatever their religious beliefs are to the near-death experiences that they have.
Well, and I think if you are like, if your ideology and how you live your life is based in religion and then you have a very powerful experience, you would be inclined to say, what does this mean like spiritually or religiously?
Exactly.
I also think like, if you pulled religion out of the equation and someone had an experience like this and they weren't like a religious person, it didn't feel religious to them, I do think it would still maybe feel pretty spiritual or like, what does this mean? And like, why did I have this experience? And
I think as people were kind of wired that way, I don't think that like a brush with death would ever not make us have an existential crisis.
Yeah, totally. Like we look for the whys in the house.
Yeah. Yeah, and we don't love our mortality.
No, we certainly don't love our...
It's a big problem for us. It's, knowledge of our own demise.
It's not great, guys.
No.
Let's not stay there.
No, let's not. So,
because all these people had a near-death experience, all right?
They are alive.
They're alive.
Or they were alive again.
And then they died later after that. Anyway.
At a different time.
Yeah, different incidents.
So, religious or not, most of these people experienced... some kind of change when they returned to their body. Some kind of like
emotional
mental
change.
Or emotional shift.
I like want to be inclined to be like, maybe I would fall lesser on that scale. One of the things that annoys me the most in life...
I thought about this already for you when I was planning this episode.
You
go
know.
On.
It's I like, know. Okay.
It's a lot of pressure.
It's a lot of pressure. And as somebody who had cancer, went through chemo, all the fucking time people want to say to me, like, oh, you're just like a different person now. It must
it's
have
an
like
incredibly
really changed
personal
your perspective.
Question.
And I'm like, first of all, they're like, no, like, I don't feel like I am. Like, I'm not afraid of doctors anymore. And I will like call in sick in a way that I probably was less inclined to do.
But those are not
person.
The changes those people are asking.
No,
about.
They're asking me if I like came to Jesus or like if I just like live my life differently. And I'm like, I was like generally pretty fine with how I was living my life before.
Yep.
I don't think there are any big alterations. And so I think there's part of me that's like to be inclined whenever people are like, you must be different now. I'm like, I'm not. And people are
no,
like,
it's
oh.
People being like, how did cancer shake you awake?
And I'm like, it didn't. Like it sucked, but like.
Also go find a story somewhere else.
Yeah, like go write your own narrative. You want to have a weird cancer come to Jesus moment? Get cancer. Don't get cancer that don't recommend. It's not what it's hyped up to be. I wrote a very negative Yelp review. But what I'm saying is, I feel like because I'm maybe so adverse to this, if I had a near-death experience, part of me is like, would I also be like, no, I'm the same? Like, would I be like really adverse to that? Because I don't like it when people try and put a lot of pressure on an experience to have changed you.
Yeah, I don't like that either.
It stresses me the fuck out and I think it's ridiculous.
Yeah. I am highly changeable though, so like maybe...
Oh, I feel like I continue to adapt and change all the time, but it's not like there's not a catalyst that's like this one bad thing happened to me and now I like see the world through fresh eyes.
Right.
Like, get out of here.
I guess I think about it more as like I could see the potential of having like a real or imagined, or maybe even imagined is real in this case, and go with me.
I'm with
but
you.
But a spiritual awakening. If that happens within you in a vacuum and you're having like a totally fake experience where your brain's firing off a bunch of crazy shit.
Sure.
But it makes you have like a spiritual awakening.
Okay.
Then like that maybe kind of is real.
Yeah.
Even if it's just in your own head.
Oh, I don't listen. Things that happen in our minds in like outside of like our environment aren't fake.
Yeah.
Just because it's happening in your brain doesn't mean it's not real.
Yeah. It's just kind of happening like in a vacuum then instead.
I totally believe that.
So in that way and in the way that like people sometimes have like a change happen in them after they do DMT.
Right.
Because it's like such an intense like spiritual experience that what they describe with DMT is having an ego death or like realizing that like you're such a small piece of the universe.
People say that about shrooms as well.
Yeah.
People
yeah.
say that about fucking ayahuasca.
Yep.
Like a lot of hallucinogens people will say I have different feelings about life now that I've
In that way, I could see myself having a major shift after a near-death experience, but kind of more in like the, like, I'm a tiny piece of the cosmos kind of way.
Yeah. I feel that. I feel that.
Yeah. But no pressure for a big change. I meet the Lord. What if I meet the Lord?
Well, okay. Let's pause on this for a moment. What if you had an hallucination that you like met God or
exactly.
a God? How would you feel? Like, would you be like...
I would obviously think it was real. Mm-hmm. Oh, well, when I woke up, I might not.
That's what I'm saying.
I would be on the fence for so long.
It's so difficult to know.
Oh, God. It would also depend on what he told me.
Mm.
He or she.
God is a woman.
What it told me.
There we go.
Yes.
Gender's
or
over.
What they told me, if there's more than one.
Yeah.
Listen. Oh, my. Oh, my.
Oh, me, oh, my.
Can't handle more than one God. It's too much.
Well, then there are some faiths you should stay away from.
I know. So, to get back into NDE research things.
Sure.
Kenneth Ring.
Kenneth?
Who was a researcher from the
80s.
Okay. In 1980, he subdivided near-death experiences into 5 stages along a continuum.
Okay.
So these subdivisions are essentially, he proposed that there is a process that you go through when you have a near-death experience or when you actually die, perhaps.
Right.
But he thinks that everyone first experiences peace, then body separation where okay. you're no longer feeling any physical pain you had.
Okay.
Then entering darkness.
Okay.
Things go black. Followed by seeing the light.
Right.
And finally, entering the light.
Oh, okay.
This to me feels very wishy-washy. And shortly after, a different researcher named Charlotte Marshall, who is a neuropsychologist at the University of Liège and the Hospital of Liège, she led a team that investigated 154 NDE cases, and she concluded that there is no fixed sequence of events. Some people experience a handful of those things. Some people experience none. It's all different. There's no sequence.
Okay. This does feel like something I'd be like, yeah, there's not a sequence.
And she was kind of trying to put like rumors about NDEs to rest because their research focused on, kind of like disproving that there is any kind of sequence. They also disproved the idea that suicides have a likelier instance of NDEs, which
they
I guess...
They disproved?
Yes. Yes. So people who attempted suicide
okay.
had no higher instance of having an NDE than non-suicides.
Okay.
Yeah. Which I'm glad that they've cleared that up. That's fine.
I mean, it's interesting to know.
That's nice of them.
It's interesting to know. It goes back to the people... kind of lit with edge play and self-strangulation,
yes.
chasing the high.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
There was on one of the Mormon websites I was reading about NDEs, there was a woman who is now, oh my God, what do they call her? She's like the like supreme queen something. She's like an insane, like majestic title in the Mormon church.
Wow, I don't know about this, but I love it.
But she attempted suicide a while ago has come back and now is like preaching about it and the Mormons love her. Anyway, in her description of her near-death experience, she describes like essentially starting to walk through hell and seeing like this group of teenagers who just like looked sad.
Mm-hmm.
And she thought to herself, we must be the suicides. And I was like,
whoa.
Oh, okay.
Whoa.
So there's some vibes on suicides causing more NDEs.
I think it's interesting. And like truly like these stages and the things you bring up just really make me think about what I know about DMT stuff.
Yes. Like, I kept thinking about DMT and I'm glad you're bringing that up because I wasn't even sure if it would fall like as being relevant.
Yeah. Well, so like high doses of DMT produce a hallucinatory state, right?
Yeah.
That usually involves a sense of another intelligent that people often describe as like super intelligent, but emotionally detached.
Yes,
sometimes.
The emotionally detached.
Mm-hmm,
yes.
Mm-hmm. Which I'm like, interesting. But it's like people will have like, and they talk about the different like dimensions that people feel like they kind of go through on DMT. There will be like an oceanic boundlessness.
Yes.
And then there's like an anxious ego, like, the kind of dissolve thing where like you like kind of lose your autonomy and you have like a visionary like restructuring of like whatever and you're hallucinating and then like these I don't know like it just like this is what that sounds like to
yes,
me.
Yes, 1000% it sounds like that.
Like I'm all just like, so this is just DMT
or ayahuasca, which I've never done. We could do a compare and contrast episode after we imbibe both of those substances.
Oh, God, help us.
Which I still think I need you to do with me.
Okay. Everyone know that I've been peer pressured about certain drugs many times. Anyway.
Many times, and I will continue to peer pressure.
If
that makes me a bad person, then I guess
I'll
see that in my reel at the end of my life. Oh, yeah, something else I haven't mentioned yet, but a lot of people describe seeing, like, the flashback, the montage of their life.
Oh, yeah, let's talk about that for a moment.
I don't know if that's... I feel like that is something that has been suggested to us, and so it happens. You know, like, if I've seen in a million movies that you have a flashback of your entire life flashes before your eyes, then maybe I actually would have that happen in a near-death moment.
Yeah.
A lot of climbers talk about when they fall but don't die. They, like, when they are falling down, see their life flash.
Wow. I don't know chemically, and I don't know if scientists, doctors, whoever know chemically, but I do feel like there has to be something that would be triggering that kind of sensation.
Oh, and like what's flooding your brain?
What's flooding your brain that makes you like all of a sudden like have like in a moment that's like sheer panic, like to your point of like a climber falling or something.
Right.
What is causing you then to just like see rapid images of like childhood and things?
Right.
Like what is that?
I wonder if it's truly an ego moment of like, I'm about to not be here anymore. Do I matter? Like what am I?
Wow.
And if DMT leads to like ego death and dying, like kind of also does.
True.
Then maybe it is like a last just kind of grip at or overview of like, who am I?
I don't know, man. That's, it's stressful to think about. But there's this part of me that I'm like, I mean, I never want to have a, like a, I'm not chasing a near-death experience.
You
y'all.
Don't? We can make it happen.
No, I'm good.
Put you on ice.
Nope.
Bring the pulse down.
Yeah, listen, Jamie.
Lower.
There was an episode of Criminal Minds where there is a cult where they got people really cold and like had them like then feel like they were born again. Then they were literally shocking them back to life. It was crazy.
That's a great way to trick some people into staying for forever. I feel like you could really fuck up some brains.
Yeah,
like
they
that.
Give people a bunch of near-death experiences and then they were like, you're born. And then everybody around you is like wearing weird, light, flowy garments. Oh, and it just was a whole thing. Anyway, all of that to say, I'm not chasing this, but there is this part of me, because probably because I haven't killed my ego, apparently my ego's not dead, that I'm like, ooh, what would my brain like trigger as like the highlight reel of my life? Like, what would I
know.
See?
I wondered that too.
What would my brain produce like independently with just like chemicals and like no control?
Right. Right. Probably not what you expect.
Mm-mm.
Huh. I have truly no idea. None.
Zero clue.
Zero. The last little thing I wanted to say about the research of Charlotte Marshall.
Oh, hi, Charlotte.
NDE Mythbuster.
Oh, I love a myth bust. Get it.
In contrary to your feelings about NDEs maybe not needing to change people's outlooks on life.
Okay. You know how I am. I'm like, listen, people don't have to be changed.
It is a lot of pressure, but
I do think it is.
Pressure or not.
Okay.
Charlotte found that most people experience profound changes in the outlook of their life and also sometimes even their personality.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Specifically, they had a much greater sense of care for humanity / the earth and connectedness. So that's nice.
I mean, I do like...
Perhaps they had a brush with the collective unconscious. Perhaps. And now they recycle.
Listen, I'm here for higher empathy. Like, I'm here for caring about things. I guess I don't think caring about certain things makes you changed. Like, do I have a greater appreciation for, like, blood drives? Like, as somebody who had, like, medical juju, I'm like, yeah, everybody should fucking donate blood that can. That's dope.
Yeah.
But I don't think that makes me a changed person. I guess maybe I'm having a syntax issue here. I'm like, I think what you're requesting of me is like the words you're using make it sound like I should have a full ideological shift. Like, are there some things that I'm like, oh, like I have some empathy and like some understanding and like some feelings about certain things that I want people to do more of or less of or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But like, I don't think that makes me changed.
Do you think the semantics of that are hard for you because essentially what's happening is you feel like other people are like telling you how you should feel?
Probably.
Because if you lift that off of it, then it doesn't feel like, I think that is the problem.
Well, and I just think there is an expectation of like,
yeah, and it's weird.
Well, like any life experience that people have, we can assign different kind of expectations on people.
Yeah.
Whether it's just like, oh, you were an only child, or oh, you had this family experience, or oh, you did this in life, or oh, you had this like negative health thing, or oh, you lost your job. Like whatever the fuck it is that you're gonna be like, oh, like you're this way now and you're gonna have a greater something for this, or you're gonna be like annoying about this.
Yeah, we have tragedy stereotypes for people.
I'm truly not mad if people do find these experiences like changing them.
Of course not.
I just have a lot of feelings about that.
But no pressure to change. And I think, like, to be changed or not changed by a near-death experience probably has a lot to do with what ideology you had before that near-death experience.
I think so.
Because you're going to project it all over that. Like, for in the U.S., for example, most people who have NDEs report seeing angels, and that's because like 45% of Americans believe in angels, but like that's not the case everywhere.
Well, true, totally. And I want to throw this about Howard. He was like, okay, I wasn't like raised religious, this wasn't my upbringing, but there's this part of me that feels like perhaps Howard was just like someone who maybe had questioned this before of like, oh, like should I believe in something? Like I feel like
dormant
Howard
Christian feelings.
Yeah, I feel like he had curiosities about this that maybe he hadn't tapped into, and then this experience
or worries,
something caused him to be like, oh nope, now I've seen the light.
Yeah I agree 100%. And then other people who don't experience any kind of like heaven or hell shit and just like see a light or machine elves and
aliens
experience peace and move into the great vacuum or whatever it is.
Okay,
whatever, it's all different and we don't know what's happening, but religious people love to use it as support, and hey, great if that's real. Also the training facilities make me nervous. But
training facilities,
I know,
bruh,
I know,
can't.
Maybe those are the people who think that like on OA what's happening is they're essentially, when they have a near-death experience, they're like entering the plane in between being alive and dead. And then they can like travel between universes and it's a whole thing. So who knows what shady experiments are happening in those facilities.
Truly, who knows.
So in the spirit of this podcast, on that note, I would like to pivot us into a verbal game.
Only way to pivot, cue the vibraphone.
Cue it. So tonight, this is more of an open-ended question.
Okay.
I want you to imagine you...
Should I close my eyes?
Go ahead.
All right. Close your eyes, everyone. Even if you're driving, just take a moment. Hope you're listening to this pod on your commute. Shut your eyes. Join us.
For the next year...
You'd have a near-death experience.
Oh, my God.
Sorry.
A real death experience, an RDE, if you will.
Please don't have an RDE while listening to our show.
No. I don't like that.
Not at all.
So, close your eyes and imagine.
Okay.
And you are...
Yes.
For the next year, you're going to be very well paid.
Oh, I like this.
You've already said yes to this, so you're not choosing whether or not you're going to do it.
Okay.
You are participating in an NDE study.
Oh, fuck.
That is a year long. You'll be living at the facility, one of these training facilities
in Brazil. Okay.
It's most likely underground.
Oh.
What you have to do in this study is... and if you watch the show OA, you can picture this happening.
Okay.
You're going to be half killed or like flatlined over and over and over to see what happens and like test it.
Yeah.
And that could be an incredible experience for you. You could learn a lot. It could really, you know, benefit you in some ways.
I'm not going to die.
You are not going to die.
Okay.
You absolutely, after that year of the study, like you have all the money you need and
am
you
I
can
have
leave.
Permanent brain damage?
No. No. Okay. Don't worry about any of that. You'll be perfectly healthy when you leave.
Okay.
The thing that you get to decide is how are they going to kill you?
This is, I'm like, are you giving me choices or am I just answering?
No, you're just answering.
I've,
and then if it's too easy, I might have to create
it's
rules.
Pretty easy for me.
Okay.
I would like hypothermia.
Yeah.
That's supposed to be pretty
that's
peaceful
the easiest,
death.
Yes, I think.
It's like
I
a
agree.
Peaceful dying. It they say it feels like you're just going to sleep.
I might also choose carbon monoxide.
I don't think I'd like that as much.
I think you just fall asleep and then
don't
wake up.
I don't know. I feel like you would have the sense of not being able to really get oxygen.
Oh, it would be a bad chest feeling.
Yeah, you'd be
you're right.
I can't breathe.
Oh my,
don't love that. Hypothermia. It's like that's the way.
Yeah,
that's the way they did it on the Criminal Minds cult episode too. They put people in like a freezer.
Oh.
Like in a walk-in. It was intense.
How long can you do you know anything about, and this is a little bit of a left turn, but just real quick, do you know anything about cryogenic freezing?
No.
Okay. Do you know anything about like the beauty cryo stuff?
Well, you know how people do like the cryogenic shit now that are like for like how 7 seconds or
yeah
long.
Like they get into the sub-zero.
I don't know, a lot of
daily.
Athletes seem to be into it. Mark Wahlberg apparently
does it
all the fucking time. Marky
Lisa
Mark.
Rinna and her teen daughters.
Her teens.
I know. I felt a little uncomfortable about that.
I don't feel like that's okay for kids. I'm not sure if it's okay for everyone. The data is not there.
I do like Lisa Rinna, but I question that move.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, I also, I think, would choose hypothermia.
Yeah, was there anything else on the table for you while you were thinking about this?
Carbon monoxide until you mentioned the chest feeling. I think you're right about that.
Maybe like a poisoning.
Really depends on what.
Yeah. Like, I don't want to do like cyanide and foam at the mouth, but if there was something that I would just like slowly drift off, and then like as I was drifting off, then they just started pumping my body full of charcoal, and then I was like detoxed. Whoa.
You're trying to work it into a whole spa situation.
Well, I don't know. But people use that as like a poison control substance, like in hospitals, charcoal.
That's true. That is true.
Especially if they don't know what you took.
Oh, yeah. Very clever.
Mm-hmm.
Austin is right now drinking a lot of charcoal, by the way.
Not actively in this moment, but I have been consuming charcoal like kind of regularly.
Generally, yes. I've enjoyed your dark lips from time to time.
Listen, you have to be careful. It does like get on your lips. Sometimes when I drink probably it at my desk teeth. At work, I'm like manically making sure nobody like comes over while it's like on me. But come over my desk, my lips are covered in like a black powder.
This is why I can't do anything like that. I can't drink that and then be in control of my body enough to.
You're not conscientious enough. You have like no self like awareness.
There's not not physically.
No, sure don't. I just know every time I take a sip, I need to like use the back of my hand to wipe my lips off.
It's too much wiping for me. Too much wiping.
Mm.
Anyway, all right. So I guess we're both gonna go cryo, and that'll be easy.
That feels great. I don't love that we just picked like a death method.
I don't either. I'm sorry for that.
Yeah, that felt a little rough.
I am sorry. I can think of something lighter.
It's not how I'd like to die in life.
No, I mean, wouldn't we all just kind of want to just slip peacefully, off the edge?
Yeah, in sleep.
Just right through the veil.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just right through the veil. Just quietly.
Yeah. I do sometimes when I think about... And maybe, this is interesting, actually. Do you have opinions on, or anything that you kind of automatically think, like, your experience will be when you die? Because in reading about other people's NDEs,
oh, wow.
Like, I realize that when I think about dying, I do have kind of a sequence that I assumed would happen that I've never examined.
Oh.
And, like, I guess what I mean is, like, when I was a little kid and I was very, like, pro like very Jesus heavy,
yes.
Strong
religious upbringing,
very very strong. I kind of thought of it the same way I do now, except like Jesus was included,
okay.
And now it's just like more mysterious.
Okay.
But I kind of see dying as like, yes, like the detachment from my body, like
okay.
Realizing kind of like that moment when you're smoking weed and like your nausea goes away.
Oh, okay.
Where it like it's like you lift and detach away from the pain.
Okay.
Kind of like that.
As someone who medicinally uses weed, there you go.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I just like, I don't know, I always have this feeling like my, almost like my brain or like my vision will like lift up into like lightness,
mm-hmm.
And then like break apart into the universe. And that part stresses me out because I don't like the idea of being like broken apart on like a spiritual level, but I'm
sure.
Open to the fact that it may happen.
Okay.
And I think that is what I have always thought, with or without Jesus. It's like a recycled into the light feeling.
Oh, okay.
It stresses me out though.
Well, I don't know. I really believe in ghosts, so
that's fair.
I like really believe in ghosts, and so I guess I have some sense of like thinking that people's spirits are like intact after they die.
Maybe
so I just hope that like I kind of like I'd like to imagine dying, like then just like having the sense of like all the other spirits,
yeah.
Being like, oh, I can see
you would
you
want
now.
That. Whoa, that's so indignant.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's so on brand actually for each of us.
Yeah.
I'm like thinking about being like in alone but also at one with the entire universe.
Mm-hmm.
And you're thinking about like getting to be with a lot of people.
Yeah, and couldn't that be like that we couldn't be like more indicative of our personalities if we tried?
Yep. Yep. Wow.
Guys,
great
here
work,
we are.
Really.
Really, I mean, truly.
What, yeah, and if you want to tell us what you envision for your
or if
your
you had
NDE
a near death
experience,
and you think
or,
you've like,
I mean,
seen something, I
or if you know someone
and if you're really changed by it, because I'm sure you are, just let us
yeah.
know.
Or if someone told you lies about a near death experience that they didn't actually have,
oh,
I'd love to know about that. I love it when people are compulsive liars.
Honestly, though, listen.
It's really fun.
As always, you can sound off to us with all of that intel on Instagram at whyyoulikethispod, via email at whyyoulikethispod@gmail.com, or find us on Twitter at WAYLTTweets.
Thank you, and good night.
Good night, but bye. Not for forever.
No, not for forever.
This is not your death.
No, bye.
Bye.